the question, should a man wear a beard? And we'll be talking about, does the sun, the stars, and the moon determine our appointed times, or does the Aviv in Israel or the Aviv in Egypt determine our appointed times, our gatherings? But right now, let's hear some music from Steve Effinger here on Yahweh Yahweh. I'm Stefan Yah, Steve Effinger, and he, Yahweh, is a mountain mover.
That's what you are to your holy word within my heart. Speaking forth those things that you said, I'm living by faith and not from my head. I'm a mountain mover, cause you're in me. You're the greater one, and that's my victory. Situations cannot hold me bound. Through the power of your word, I speak and they fall down. Verily, verily, you said unto me, that if I told the mountain to be cast in the sea, and did not doubt but believe what I said, that I would have whatsoever I say. Coming your way.
Steve Effinger, and that was from the early 80s. Man from Spokane, Washington, Steve Effinger, who sang and played the keyboard with Mountain Mover. How do we determine the feasts? How do we determine Feast of Weeks and the Feast of Tabernacles? Do they all hinge upon the barley? A question, if using barley, does it have to be in Israel for determining the first scriptural month? Or should it be in Egypt that we check the barley heads, if we are going to check them at all? The following scriptures are used to support using barley to determine the first month of the new scriptural year. Exodus chapter 9, Exodus 9:29. Moshe replied, "When I have gone out of the city, I will spread out my hands in prayer to Yahweh. The thunder will stop, and there will be no more hail, so you may know that the earth is Yahweh's." So that didn't say anything at all about beginning the new year using barley. And then verse 31, the flax and the barley were destroyed, since the barley had headed and the flax was in bloom. That event happened in Mitzrayim in Egypt. Egyptian barley on Egyptian land with Egyptian weather. If conditions are to be duplicated as close as possible to the event above, for determining the first scriptural month, shouldn't the barley be checked in Mitzrayim, in Egypt, each year where the event happened, and not Jerusalem? Well, what about Leviticus 23, verse 9? This section is not discussing how to determine the first month of the year. It is not saying to use barley to determine the season appointed times. Leviticus 23, 9 through 14 is saying not to harvest until you first take a sheaf and make a first fruit offering. Notice also the last verse. This is to be a lasting ordinance for the generations to come, or wherever you live. Now, I am a generation to come, and I live in the West Coast. Before I start a harvest, I should take a sheaf and make a first fruit offering to Yahweh. But still, none of this is instruction on how to determine the first month of the year. Here's what the Scripture says about determining the appointed times. Genesis chapter 1, verse 14. Yahweh said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs, and for seasons, and for days, and for years." Or we could also translate that as appointed times for the word English word seasons. It can also be translated appointed times, and should be, or should have been. "And let them be for lights in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth." And it was so. And Yahweh made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. That's the moon, of course. He made the stars also. And Yahweh set them in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth and to rule over the day and over the night and to divide the light from the darkness. And Yahweh saw that it was good. So that was in the book of Genesis, chapter 1. And we can use the sun to determine the beginning of the day, starting at evening when the sun sets. So here's a method that defines the scriptural months to begin with the first new moon after the vernal equinox. The vernal or spring equinox is that moment when the sun passes directly overhead the Earth's equator. It is called the equinox because on that day at the equator, day and night are of equal length. It is called the spring equinox because this event ends winter. And for those who have a four season, that is not in Scripture, but four season people, it brings the spring season to the hemisphere that the sun is entering. Should the new year start in the winter or in the spring? According to the Karaites in the Byzantium period by Zvi Ancorai, the author, the Karaites in Babylon did not use barley to determine the first month, but they used the vernal equinox. I believe that Yahweh gave us a method that allowed people anywhere on the earth to keep the feasts and to know the first month through all these centuries without any knowledge about barley from Egypt, Israel, without a telephone or computer or Android, etc. Now, the method of using the equinox has been known and used for well over 2,500 years, provided a method used for centuries when electricity and phones did not exist to contact Mithraim or Egypt. Was it wrong then? Can we choose to use it instead of barley and not be in sin? Some claim that using the equinox method is astrology, which is pagan. Observing the sun passing overhead the equator is astronomy, not astrology. Yahweh would not tell us to do something that is sin, and he did say in Genesis 1:14, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night, and let them serve as signs to mark the seasons, the appointed times, and days, and years." There are many, many arguments or issues for and against the method. However, its use would result in believers using the appointed times on the date set to allow planning and bring unity among the brethren. Fellowship at these times would greatly increase also, and it would also be obedient by not inserting barley into the verse there of Genesis chapter 1, but following it properly, not following tradition, but the majority of people follow the tradition. And it's popular to keep their Easter in March, April. This year in 2013, we'll be keeping the feast of, and the new moon, the new year, we'll be keeping the feast of Passover more like the fourth, fifth month. I know that it ends on the second day of the fifth month. It would be the last high day of unleavened bread. I don't have the calendar right in front of me, but I do have on the website other contact information and the dates already set up there for you in text and in audio on YahvehYahweh.name or .com. Using the barley to determine the month of Aviv and setting up the scriptural calendar for the year, some have been going to the barley fields in America for several years and trying to learn more each year, but it's very shocking to find out that we turn to the book of Genesis and find out that it is nowhere to be seen where barley is to be used to determine the new year. And that's a little bit about fudging on the feasts and on the calendar there. And that article was taken from the truthofyahweh.org. And now we're going to go to the section about beards. But before we do that, quickly here, pastors tolerating and promoting divorce and remarriage. They're teaching divorce and remarriage, or what I call DNR, which is it's so prevalent. I would think that 90% now of Protestant pastors and Catholic teachers and leaders are allowing divorce and remarriage for the case of adultery instead of, like it should have been, the case of, in Deuteronomy 22 there, found her not a maid, the case of that a woman claimed that she was a virgin. It turned out she wasn't, and so she lied. It was treachery to tell her would-be husband that she was a virgin and never had been with a man in that marital situation. And in today's world of the evangelical fishes, and homosexuality is tolerated and promoted and taught, even in the Seventh-day churches. Not all of them, but some of them. I notice it's starting to come out now, starting to come out of the closet there. It says in Leviticus or Vayikra, chapter 18, "Thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind. It is abomination." Also see Leviticus 18:29. "For whosoever shall commit any of these abominations, even the souls that commit them, shall be cut off from among their people. Therefore shall you keep my ordinances," and it also talks about bestiality in there, "you shall keep my ordinances, and that you commit not any one of these abominable customs which were committed before you, and that you defile not yourselves therein. I am Yahweh." He also says that it defiles the land, and that these abominations are being practiced. If you talk to the men out there working on the power line, you may find out that a lot does go on behind the scenes. It says, "Thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind." So I asked an Assembly of God attendant, a Christian man, if he believed homosexuality was wrong. And he said, well, he didn't know. And I quoted this verse here, Leviticus 18:22, "Thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind. It's an abomination." And he said, well, I think that just means that you're not supposed to lie in the same bed with him. Well, then if that were true, why would they even be having any physical contact? Because they'd have to be in the same bed. So, and that's a sensitive subject. By the way, the one on the calendar is about the most difficult subject to approach, to address there. The one we just did there about Aviv, that's very, very difficult. But, well, now on second thought, after having read Genesis chapter 1, I don't know really how difficult that really was. That was pretty easy. That barley is just not in the equation. It's not in the scriptures there, having to do with setting the appointed time. So it kind of ends it all there. But if you were to really get into the in-depth about barley and you know, how the different crops are, the seasons, and how the barley is planted and where you're supposed to go to examine it and all that, supposedly supposed to go, then Sure, that would be very, very difficult. But it's so simple to just walk outside no matter what spot you are on the Earth. Well, some will use the exception of North-South Pole. And it's just going to be the lowest part of the sun was going to determine and the curvature of the sun for that day is going to determine the new day. But so easy to just walk outside and find out when the times are going to end and start again, when the day is over and the new day is beginning, and also to check the seasons. And it's easy to check the equinox as well. If you've got a couple of sticks and put them up and put a mark on the barn door there. Well, you don't have a barn, do you? But most of us don't have barns anymore, but that would sure be wonderful if we did have them. For agricultural reasons, to get in the great outdoors there. Now the section on beards that most people are not really that interested in anyway, but I assume you are, or you wouldn't have tuned in here. But first of all, how about the heart? Because I contend that we need to be on fire for Yahweh and stop being so selfish. People say, why do you drag us into such a long discussion? Some people will say that, not you, but why do you drag us into all this and go on and on and on and all these scriptures and everything? Well, then I would say, well, it appears that you're interested in spiritual things, but you're not that interested. You don't want to go into depth or in depth, or maybe you just don't have the time or the opportunity. But when you do have it, you should take it. 1 Samuel 16 is one of the 1 Samuel 16, about the heart. The heart is deceitful and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Anyone's heart is not perfect, yet my heart is not perfect. Is your heart perfect? I know some people who think that their hearts are perfect. But about the issue of obedience, it comes from a pure heart. We want to be obedient to the Word. Yahweh does look on our actions and outward appearances. And when it comes to man's outer appearance, why dress up to come before him if he doesn't care anyway? Just run around with nothing. No, that would be against Scripture there in Leviticus 18 and so on. But it does make a big difference. We do like to dress up when it comes to coming to the assemblies. Not just to impress the leader or the song leaders or that pretty girl over there. No, we do it first of all. Well, we should do it first of all because that we want to show respect for Yahweh, and secondly for His people, and for the gathering there. Even respect for our own bodies. To dress up, yes. None of this 10% cleavage or 2% or. If you're a woman, I don't believe in that. Frowardness, it says there in the book of Proverbs, frowardness is in his heart, Proverbs 6:14. Ecclesiastes, by the sadness of the countenance, the heart is made better. Ecclesiastes 7:3, the sadness of the countenance. Some say that, show them you're saved by smiling. Well, I would think then that most of society is saved then, because most people smile at one time or another. Proverbs 18:12, the heart of man is haughty. That was 18:12 and also 19:21 and 22:15. I know I'm doing this on a rapid fire here, but it's also on the screen there if you look up the text on the website. 22:15, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. Oh, that's just for children. No, I'm a child too. I'm a child of the King of Yahweh. And if you're not, then you don't belong here. No, I'm not going to chase you off there. 23:7, Proverbs, as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. I think I've had a problem with that one there. And as long as it's being recorded here around the Passover time, I'd like to confess that. Matthew 6:21, the Messiah said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be. And where is your heart today? Is it on the treasures? Do our possessions possess us? But Karite Corner, or karite-karitecorner.org, does have a one there about shaving on the left-hand side as you move the cursor down a little bit. And that may lead to the truth on beards and other Hebraic apparel. Leviticus 19, verse 2 says, "Speak unto the congregation of the children of Yisrael," Yahweh says. Leviticus 19:27. "You shall not round the corners of your heads, neither shalt thou mar the corners of thy beard." Or, "Thou shalt not mar the extremities of thy beard." That can be translated just as well if you look in the Hebrew lexicon over the word mar. Look them all up. "Neither shalt thou mar the corners or extremities of thy beard." So some people think that it's okay to trim it up a little bit. And "you shall not round off the side growth of your heads, nor harm the edges of your beard." It was taken from a 1995 New American Standard Bible. I don't use that normally, but I saw that reference there. In the next chapter, skip the chapter 20, go to chapter 21, verse 5. And it says, "Neither shall they shave off the corner of their beard, nor make any cutting in their flesh." 21:5 of Leviticus there. "Neither shall they shave off the corner or the extremities of their beard, nor make any cutting in their flesh." You know, some would try to tie that, the Karaites, actually, on that website, I noticed that they tried to tie that in with paganism there, that you're not supposed to do any mourning for the dead. And in that respect, you're not supposed to shave off your beard if you're mourning for the dead. But otherwise, if you're not mourning, it's okay. It looked like they were saying it's okay to shave off the extremities of your beard. But I would like to just take that literally and go on record as saying that it would be wrong for a man to shave off the extremity of his beard, just like the scripture says. I just take it simply like that, like a child. I just read it for what it says. 2 Kings chapter 2 and Job 1:20 are also other scriptures about this. Yahweh is addressing all the congregation of the children of Yahweh. Except for the sacrifices, the rest of the statutes in Leviticus 19 all go together and apply equally, including verse 27 on the not cutting or destroying the man's beard. But there's always some doubt somewhere, isn't there? An alibi, or some people would say there in Genesis 1 about the planets and so on. Well, maybe the scripture isn't even written by Yahweh in the first place. Maybe it's just by man, and somebody just made it all up. Maybe. I have doubts too. I have a lot of doubts, and one way I can cure that is just by having more doubt. That doesn't seem to make any sense. No, I start doubting my doubts. I'm saying, well, that's silly. Why do I doubt that? That's crazy. Of course the scripture is true. Why would all of those people have died? Why would prophecy have come true, and why is it coming true? And why are people murdering others for following the scripture? Or why do they fire them at their jobs for following the scripture? Why are the Israelites and the Ephraim people of today continually sitting there changing their doctrine and watering it down, and it seems to be approaching the descriptions found in Daniel in the book of the Revelation with our lethargic Laodicean attitudes of anything goes, whatever feels good, do it. And, well, we've got to play some of those cuts here. But if you read Leviticus chapter 18, 19, 20, and 21, all those scriptures there, except for the sacrifices that were done away with, according to Hebrews. But here's what one man says about the beards. That he is selling a product, and this is from back in the 1950s when the technology was just really getting a good start. But here's exactly how to shave off that beard and break Yahweh's commandment now. And I don't advise that you follow this man's advice. Don't follow his advice, but we'll have a comment about it. Here we go.
There is nothing that gets those whiskers off faster and cleaner. Now, when I say gets them off faster, I don't mean you have to rush through your shave. You know, no. Because shaving is a very important part of your day. After all, you're becoming a man, right? Right.
Well, the question might be, how does one become a man in Yahweh's eyes? By breaking his commandments and disobeying the scripture? A lot of Christians would agree with
now,
that.
Now, here's what you do. You get up in the morning, or if you're going out before a date, something like that, you know, you wash your face with soap and water, rinse it off, leave it wet. Then you get the shaving cream and you put it all over your face. Now, put a lot of it on. You know, not too much, but a lot. And then you let it sit there. You don't shave right as soon as you put the shaving cream on. That's no good. You let it sit on your face a few minutes. Then take that Gillette razor. There is nothing that will get that beard off so quick as a Gillette razor blade.
Well, he's teaching us to break the commandments. But it says, you shall not round the corners of your heads, neither shalt thou mar the corners of thy beard or the extremities of thy beard. And Yahweh says that the land is defiled with abominations.
Look for it. Remember, the smoothest, finest shave you have ever had is a Gillette shave. Take it from me. And I've shaved off a lot of beard. You'll never have a finer shave than with a Gillette. Try it, will you?
Look sharp. Feel sharp. Be sharp.
Yahweh says, keep my statutes and judgments and testimonies and do them, and you shall have life. And the joker, the preacher, the comedian, whoever, says, no, obey man's way. Yahweh says, blessed is the man that walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the law of Yahweh, and in his law does he meditate day and night. Paul also agrees with that in Romans 7 and 6, 7, and 8. So, and I'm never going to effectively be able to stand up with some protesting preacher and to argue these points with him and be able to expect to win anybody over. It has to be the Spirit of Yahweh who wins our hearts. The Spirit of Yahweh will do this. It's fruitless to just sit around and contend over the pros and cons, the ins and outs, the ramifications and so on of these scriptures, because somebody's going to come along and try to do away with it. And they really have their good excuses, don't they? They have such alibis. But, okay, now there's more about this here. There it is. There's laws about the wearing of beards for religious reasons in the United States. The federal statute regards beards and the Sabbath. And these laws, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, Title 7, and as amended, Section 701J and so on, scheduling and practices including beards. The burden of proof is on the employer concerning undue hardship. It means he has to hire a replacement person to fill in for you. And this is a reasonable accommodation. He must choose what least disadvantages you, including the extra costs. Now, I haven't enforced that on my employers to try to force him to come under that law, but he sure likes to put me under his laws, doesn't he? How about those exceptions to the rule? We've covered this in other webcasts, but why not follow all of the word of Yahweh today? And not try to just live close to the line and live as worldly as possible and try to get away with it. In these last days, things are going to be popping and hopping and not in a good way. So those exceptions for beards, somebody said regarding shaving, I believe when one came off of a vow, they were to shave their head and beard. And then they can quote different places in Scripture, probably Ezra 9:3, Ezekiel 5:1, and then they gave Isaiah 4:10, but that didn't relate to the beard situation, so that was not a correct reference there. They got the wrong reference, I guess. But there are places about exceptions where the head was to be shaved. Yahweh never changes. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever, Hebrews 13:8. Who changed Yahweh's statutes and judgments? It was Jeroboam. It was the protesting preacher, and about coming off of a vow. Well, I'm not in a period of mourning coming off of a vow. Are you? Or are they? Do they have leprosy? That stubborn preacher wants the exceptions for leprosy to apply in all situations, in his situation. Those exceptions, living by the exceptions all the time. That's not sincerity and truth. Let us be sincere with Yahweh. The exception does not make the rule. Or there's a better way to say that. We don't live by exceptions. And then, in the text, I have Isaiah 26:4, trust in Yahweh forever. For in Yahweh, Yahweh is everlasting strength. And the King James and many modern versions use the title Lord instead of Yahweh, but it is Hebrew word number 3068 in the Strong's concordance there, and that means Yahweh. That's not Lord, a title, or a Baal title, or anything like that. Trust in Yahweh. In Yahweh forever. Trust in Yahweh, excuse me. Hebrew word 3050 again. Yahweh is everlasting. Hebrew word 3068. And Lord is mistranslated from Baal, but should be Yahweh, H, or Hebrew word 3068. Lord, Hebrew 3050 is the contracted for, and they say it's contracted for Yahweh as Yah, but and then Jehovah, as there's some conjecture in using that, but Yahovah is valid and legitimate, and so we pronounce YHVH as YAHVAH, Yahweh, or Yahweh. That's how we pronounce that. A lot of people have questions about that. And I wanted to go back and talk for a moment here about the adultery situation again, that I said in Deuteronomy 22 that the woman was guilty of lying, and I know that that's not true, that the case was, as the gentleman there, the spouse-to-be, was falsely accusing the woman of being a virgin. So, again, the reference is Deuteronomy 22, and we need to first read that, Deuteronomy 22, about fornication, porneia. If a woman lied to her betrothed husband that she was a virgin, the marriage would not be legitimate. And there are more to it than that, of course. Marriage is a covenant, not a one-time action. It's not like a sin that can be forgiven. So marriage is a covenant. It's not an action which can be forgiven, like transgression of the law. Then, let's review Exodus. Let's review Leviticus 23 in relation to the barley equinox question. Leviticus 23:9-14, when you become into the land which I give unto you. And so I would think that the land that we are living right now is what Yahweh has given us, although specifically he was talking about into the chosen, the promised land there. When you come into the land which I give unto you and shall reap the harvest thereof, then you shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits of the harvest unto the priest, and he shall wave the sheaf before Yahweh to be accepted to you, accepted by Yahweh to you, on the morrow after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. And in verse 14, it should be a statute forever throughout your generations and all your dwellings. So I am in a dwelling, and I am also in a generation to come that they look forward to, this generation to come. And I'm living in a dwelling, in my dwelling, so I shall keep this statute as well. And my wave offering is actually Messiah. I'm not literally bringing a sheaf of first fruits. I wouldn't know how to go get one, buy it over the internet. But this section of Scripture is not discussing how to determine the first month of the year. It is not saying to use barley to determine the season, the appointed times. Genesis 1:14 does that. The sun, the moon, and the stars determine our appointed times. Leviticus 23 9 is saying not to harvest until you first take a sheaf and make a first fruit offering. And the last verse again, this is to be a lasting ordinance for the generations to come in all your dwellings or wherever you live. And that's an interpretation, wherever you live. I am in a generation to come, and I live in the West Coast. And before I start the harvest, I should take and ask the Messiah to make that first fruit offering for me. And none of this instruction is on how to determine the first month of the year, although coincidentally it is used there in the beginning of your months in the book of Exodus. Exodus 12, for example, Exodus 12 says, "And Yahweh," or Yahweh, "spoke unto Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, This month shall be unto you the beginning of months," or the new year, Exodus 12 here. That's when, it's not the Roman Catholic New Year, no, it's the scriptural New Year, the Hebraic New Year. And also, incidentally, salvation is of the Jews, right? It comes through the tribe of Yehuda, of which Messiah was in the tribe. He is the Lion of the tribe of Yehuda. "This month shall be unto you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you." It happens that the first month determined by Genesis 1:14 is called Aviv. Ears of barley are present there, hopefully. And the first month is not determined as a result of Aviv. You also see the articles concerning the Hebrew word tikafa, the equinox that we have available here on this website. So this method determines the first scriptural month to begin with the first new moon after the spring vernal equinox. The heart is deceitful. Jeremiah says that the heart is deceitful above all things, but desperately wicked. Who can know it? And people have that expression there. Well, he knows my heart. He knows my heart is right. But the heart is deceitful even for a true believer. Also see James 4:8, Jeremiah 17:9. And then keep the Sabbath here in Jeremiah 17. Thus saith Yahweh, take heed to yourselves and bear no burden on the Sabbath day, nor bring it in by the gates of Jerusalem. Neither carry forth a burden out of your houses on the Sabbath day, neither do any work, but hallow, or set apart the Sabbath day as I commanded your fathers. But they obeyed not. So that was one of the two great sins, was breaking the Sabbath. The other great sin was what? Not believing in the Messiah? No, it doesn't say that. In the earlier scriptures, it says it was idolatry. But anyway, they obeyed not, neither inclined their ear, but made their neck stiff, that they might not hear nor receive instruction. That sounds very familiar. It shall come to pass, if you diligently hearken unto me, saith Yahweh, to bring in no burden through the gates of the city on the Sabbath, but separate the Sabbath, make it separate and pure, to do no work therein. Then there shall enter into the gates of the city kings and princes sitting upon the throne of David, riding in chariots and on horses, and a lot of blessings there. They and the princes, the men of Judah, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, this city shall remain forever. And they should come from all over. 27, but if you'll not hearken unto me to hallow the to separate the Sabbath day and not to bear a burden, even entering in at the gates of Jerusalem on the Sabbath day, then will I kindle a fire in the gates thereof, and it shall devour the palaces of Jerusalem, and it shall not be quenched. And that's the end of that chapter there, chapter 17. So much to read about the Sabbath, the feasts, and obedience. And, yeah, of course, first of all, we must accept the Messiah in our hearts and accept his commandments and laws and make that covenant with him, that new covenant, to let him write his laws, his Torah, in our hearts and in our inward parts, in our minds, so that we will be like a puppet, a cookie cutter Christian? No, so that we will obey him out of a motive of love. First John says that if we love him, we'll keep his commandments. Also the book of John says that, but 1 John 5:2, love is, and it gives that definition there, 1 John 5:2, and it certainly is a way of life, halakha, a way to walk in Yahweh's Torah. Thank you for joining me, Stefan Yah, and we'll catch you next time out there in cyberspace. Maranatha, may Yahweh come quickly, and may we be prepared. Bless his pure name. Shalom.